In a world where vision is everything, you won't get to see it. When the trail goes cold, you won't find a stream. They're about to get away. But your region is blocked.
Can't watch films from home? Proton VPN allows you to stream what you miss from over 120 countries. Download Proton VPN today. Check your streaming service terms and conditions. May restrict VPN use. Active streaming subscription required.
Get ready to hear some hilarious dating stories with myself, Fiona, and
Debbie.
Coming.
Oh, UTI.
How did you know?
Boots, pharmacist. I'm just a walk-in away for diagnosis and treatment.
Oh.
Hey, have you got any date stories for us?
Do I?
You're never too far from a pharmacist. Boots, with you for life.
Subject to pharmacist availability and suitability assessment. Uncomplicated UTI women only. Charges may apply.
Autumn, when the colours change and the breeze is fresher. A time to take stock and start some new autumn rituals, like cozying up with your fave podcasts. Whilst you immerse yourself, complement your me time with Costa Coffee's Maple Hazel range. Enjoy a silky latte, a refreshing iced latte, or luxurious hot chocolate. It's the taste of autumn in a cup. Head to your nearest Costa Coffee store or Costa Express machine to pick up a Maple Hazel drink while stocks last.
Right, let's get this rolling. I gotta go chop wood tonight. I got a wood boiler. This is my first winter with it, so I'm stressing out how much wood I'm gonna need. So I've just been like every night splitting wood, chopping wood. It's killing me, Joel.
That's one of my favorite hobbies.
Splitting wood?
I have probably 50 cords split right now.
Shut up.
I do it all the time.
Okay, what kind of splitter do you have?
I had one my dad made me. It's gas powered. I don't do it by hand.
No, I got a gas powered one too. It's still a pain.
Yeah, then I bought another one that does both horizontal and vertical. So when you get a log that's too big, you don't have to lift it up.
I have the same setup. It's still a pain. I like it too, but 50 cords?
Well,
How long did that take you to do?
Probably over time, 4 or 5 years.
I was going to say, I thought you were going to say 4 or 5 months. I was going to call you a liar.
No, but I'll go out and cut and do a cord of wood every day I go out there when I go out, but no, I don't
incredible.
Go in the summer. It's too hot.
Yeah. They're selling wood here in Northern Michigan for $125 a cord. It's insane how expensive it is.
And it's soft wood, isn't it?
Well, it's hard, but it's all green.
It is.
So you want this.
Oh, okay.
So you want that year or 2 year seasoning. So that's where I'm at. I just started this year. So I'm going to try to split 40 cords, burn 20, have 20, and do that rotation and just keep doing 20 a year. But whatever. All right. You don't care. It is worth it. It is worth it. I have all my kids are girls. So I have no one to stack or help. And so it's all on me.
8 girls? You're not only 8, but they're all girls?
Yeah. Isn't that nuts?
God. Oh, God's getting you for something.
I know. Trust me. I know. There's a lot there to get me on. But all right. Let's get this going. Let's have some fun. I'm going to start it. Let's see. 3, 2, 1. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. Just chatting with one of the guys I looked up to growing up. And now just speaking to them for the first time ever, Joey Kosher. Awesome guy. Lives in downstate Michigan from Saskatchewan. I just found out he grew up 40 minutes down the road from where my mom was born. So, Joey, thanks for joining the show, man. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me on.
So, just looking at your stats and just looking first glance, you never know what to expect. But when I start digging into you, it's a hell of a career. And, you know, you don't know with tough guys where they fall on the skill or this and that. But 4-time cup champion It says on your Instagram page, three-time cup champion. It says on your hockey DB, drafted fifth overall, almost a car crash out in front of my office. But it's insane to see the hardware sitting on your shelf behind you, the history you've had. Do you ever just look back? Because I got a pretty neat history myself, but I never won a cup. Is it nuts to look back and say, holy crap, I got rings, I got hardware. It's got to be amazing.
Yeah, you know, well, first off, I wasn't a fifth overall draft pick. I was
fifth round. Did I say fifth overall?
Fifth overall.
That was a slip of the tongue, Joe.
Yeah, no, it's pretty surreal, especially getting together with a lot of the guys I go play with now. Like I just spent a few days with Jeremy Roenick or Kelly Chase or Brad May or Craig Berube, and we all have great conversations, but you don't realize that there was so few players that win a Stanley Cup each year. And like Detroit, when we go back to back, that's there's a lot of guys that don't get a chance to do what I did. I was just lucky enough to be a part of some really good organizations with some really good hockey players that that got lucky and won.
Yeah, it's funny because I played with the Joe Thornton and the Patty Marleau and these guys, mm-hmm. and they spent 20 years chasing a cup. And it's weird how it's all about just finding the right spot. And you get drafted, you know, like you said, fifth round, 88th overall. But it just so happens that same draft, you pick up Yzerman, you pick up Probert, Peter Klima, underrated player, doesn't get talked about that much. And then I didn't even realize that Stu Grimson was a part of your draft too, all drafted by Detroit in that 1980, what was it, 84 draft, 83 draft?
83.
So you're this young kid, probably 18 years old. My first instinct is camp is a battle. You want to make the team. You're trying to turn heads. Was Stewie at camp, Grimson at camp, or did he not even report?
I think everybody came to camp that year. I know when they drafted us in June, they brought us all into Michigan, to Detroit, to go to a Tiger game, to meet the ownership, and we all got to spend a weekend together. But for myself, and actually Stewie and Proby too, is the Wings weren't very good. They were not tough at all. So we had an inside edge to make that team. And I don't know that Stu played much. I don't know if they traded him, but I know Proby and I were there for quite some time.
Yes, Stewie actually re-entered the draft. And then he got drafted 2 years later by another team. So I guess that was a thing where if you don't sign, you just get drafted again. So I don't know who we got picked up by in the second draft 2 years later in 1985. But yeah, I was looking at that draft. I'm like, holy crap, we got Kosher, Grimson, and Probert. Arguably three of the toughest of all time going to Detroit. So you immediately, if you're the Red Wings, go from having no toughness to like we're set for two decades. Did you know that going into camp when you saw Probert? And you're 18 years old and you go, okay, I can get behind this. Here we go.
No, because back in the 80s, there was no social media. So I didn't know who Bob Probert was. I didn't know who Stu Grimson was. I know they played in the East. And I mean, Stewie played in Regina. But no, you go in there and it's really just blind. You don't know what's going on. You don't even really know the Red Wing hockey team because I didn't watch the Red Wing hockey. We watched Toronto Maple Leafs or Montreal Canadiens on Hockey Night in Canada. So unless they were playing Detroit, we didn't get a chance to watch them. So I come in with very little expectation other than the fact that I knew what my job would be to make the NHL. And I went into camp. I didn't like anybody. I went after everybody. I got everybody mad at me, but that probably turned some heads for the coaching staff and management. And it helped me out to make that team in the next year and a half or so.
That's insane. So that's crazy that you didn't know really anybody. Cause I guess, yeah, social media, even just picking up a newspaper, what did you do to get ready for camp then? Because obviously training is different and I'm guessing you don't have a trainer. You don't have a program. There's not this off season guy walking you through the steps. So what does a Joey Kosher do to get ready for the Red Wings camp in 84, 85?
Well, it's funny you say just about no social media or anything is I was actually working in a lumber yard delivering lumber the day I got drafted. I had no idea I was going to get drafted. I got a call from the dispatcher telling me I was drafted. But
no kidding.
No, back in the day, we had no workout program. We had no my workout program was my old man sending me out into the fields to pick stones all day and pick roots and pick me up at 7 o'clock at night and feed me and send me out the next day. So, I mean, no workout is going to compare to what you do on the farm. And that's probably was a big, big help getting me to where I was.
What do you, and I want to talk about this maybe in the fighting standpoint too, but what do you think about how you did it and versus how it's done today? Because you look at these kids I had Tage Thompson on the show the other day, and he was just, he hits his head against the wall because he can't even criticize players anymore. You know, guys on his teams, you can't yell at them because they're just so soft. Do you just shake your head sometimes and you go, like, how did we go from picking rocks in the field, drinking beers, having fun to where we are now, where you can't even like tell a player he isn't playing good or else he needs a mental reset and a break from the game? Cause it's Joe, that's where we're at right now. Do you just shake your head?
It's just a different, it's not only hockey. It's just sports in general. It's life in general. I mean, I guess we can blame some of the social media on that because everybody sees what everyone's doing. Back in the day, there was no cameras, no phones. We went out and picked rocks and drank beer all night and got up in the morning and did it again. It's just, it was the mentality of a small town farm boy. And when they came to the big city, they went hard at practice. They went hard after practice. Today's generation is, I mean, we used to go out for lunches after practice and spend a few hours with the boys and get to know everybody. Yep. Nowadays they're drinking a milkshake after practice at the rink, going home, and they don't play for each other anymore. They don't have that love for each other that we all had.
And do you, it translates onto the ice because the rivalries back in the day were so intense because you loved everybody you played with. And when you hurt one of my teammates, you hurt me and I'm going to get some revenge for that. Do you see the lack of rivalries in the NHL? I don't know. It's a weird question, but I agree that the care for your teammates is not there anymore because everybody's, yeah, like you said, you just go home and you check out. You go and play video games and you're just not a team anymore.
Yeah, they're, and I don't want to speak on behalf of them, but they're there. It's a job. They're there for their paycheck. They're, you get a lot of influx of the, I don't want to say this in a bad way, but the Europeans, when they come over at first, they really didn't know what a Stanley Cup was until the Russians and the Swedes started winning them. So they started to really play for that. But there are so many younger generation kids that are just here as a job. And you know what?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I mean, great for them. They're making a ton of money, but they're not going to feel the love and the respect and the, still have for the game. When we get together, the old guys that we even fought, we get along, we go for beers, we'll never forget what we had. I don't believe this generation is going to have that same thoughts when their game is retired. They're just going home and continuing on with life.
Yeah, punch in, punch out. And just talking about care, was there, how serious did you take your role? Because we played the same role. I was a fighter, you were a fighter. Did you take it as serious as I did? Because my job was, you don't touch my team. I'm going to protect every single one of you. And if you look sideways at somebody, I'm going to take care of it. You're coming into a young team in Detroit and you have these young stars. Did you realize right away? It's like, okay, my moneymaker is Steve Yzerman. Then you get a Sergei Fedorov, and then you get some more young guys. Did you realize early, like, okay, this is my meal ticket. Don't touch these guys. This is going to take us to the promised land.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, you and I both know we weren't drafted to score goals or get assists or be in a power play. We were out there for a reason, and it was actually a great reason. Some nights were tough, knowing what you're going to have to do and how big the guys were that you're going to be fighting, and you had to be ready for that. But it was an honor to have that job. It's like I would skate around the ice watching out for my teammates, and I'll never forget those opportunities. And it just made it something I can look back on and just be proud of.
What would you say or do anything in warmups or, you know, first couple shifts to maybe just put the feelers out there? Like, you touch Stevie, I'm coming to get you. What would you do? Maybe early in the season to set the tone?
I think in warmups, you always kind of hovered over the red line, took a look at who was on the ice. Kind of, well, with Proby, we'd have to pick and choose who was going to, who got who, and I mean, who was going to run the goalie first? We took turns on that. I mean, we had a lot of fun times. It was terrible. So, I mean, the one year we got 40 points. So a lot of fans were there to watch what Proby and myself and the other guys did. So that's what got people into the building. So, yeah, we had a lot of fun. But as the team got better and we had to adjust our roles to, I guess, want to say more of a team player and not fight just to fight. We'd fight for a reason. But early on, it was just kind of mayhem because there was nothing in Detroit.
So yeah, so I played with Derek Boogaert and 3 years with Boogie, and he was as tough as they come. And we never really talked about who we would take. And you mentioned it here where you had to talk about who you're going to fight. I think Derek always took the tough guy, and then I took the leftovers for the most part. What would you and Proby talk about? Like, would you have the conversation before the game, in warmups, after warmups, sitting in the locker room, on the bench if something happened? It's like, oh, I'm taking this guy. Because there was plenty of tough guys to go around.
I don't know that we ever, unless one of us had a beef with another enforcer, or maybe we lost a fight or they got the better of us, we might discuss who was going first. But it was more just what happened on the ice. And it's kind of funny you ask that question, as I was in Toronto a while back and I mentioned to Todd Gill, and I said, Todd, why did you fight me all those times? Now, Todd is 6 foot, but he's about 180 pounds. He's not a big man, but he's a brave man. And he says, well, the problem was you and Wendell were cousins or relatives. You would never fight Wendell. So because Wendell fought Proby, I was stuck with you all the time. And you don't think about that back 40 years ago, but it makes a lot of sense now. Because if Proby was fighting one guy on the other team all the time, well, I was getting the rest of them. And that's how it just kind of turned out.
It's crazy to look back at your stats, because nowadays – a guy who has 10 fights, it's like, whoa, like that's great. Like that, what a great year. He fought so many times, 10, 15 fights. And you look at your card and it's 26, it's 25, 30, 36. Like that was the norm back in the day. Listen, I know you're healthy. I've watched the interviews. In season, how tough was that? Because I want to talk about this a little later. You're not swinging and missing like the guys are these days. You're connecting. How did you do it?
Well, it was love of the game. It was just part of what my job was. The only difficult part was practices the next day, or sometimes sleeping at night, because I did swing pretty hard. I was reckless with what I swung at. I wasn't worried about a helmet. And during the season, my knuckles were pretty much open all season. So back in the day, you can't put tape on your knuckles. You can't put Band-Aids. So I would have to play with open wounds. And the next day at practice, trying to put a glove on, it was never comfortable. And then sleeping at night, the wife would always be mad about blood all over the pillow. But you know what? It was a life that I had, the life that I chose, and it was just what I had to do.
You just got a reminder. Guess what paid for those pillows, honey? Right here, the old mitts. That's what I tell my wife when she gets after me. Like, hey, guess what paid for this? All of this. So you know that's why. But going back to that, did you ever think about your future? Like, man, like, okay, I'm really messing up my hands or my shoulder or my face, because I can't breathe out of the right side of my face. My hands, I get arthritis even when it gets cold, and I'm 10 years younger than you, 15 years younger. You don't think about that, but I don't know. You're an animal.
No, you don't. You never think about that when you're playing. And then you hear the people whispering around you, you're going to have arthritis when you get older. You're not going to be able to open your hand. You're going to blow up. All the things they expect hasn't happened to me. I mean, my hands are, they've never been better right now. I really don't have any arthritis. I'm a little stiff and sore in the morning sometimes when I skate, but I've been blessed with having some pretty good health, and hopefully that continues.
So you're going to go do that bare knuckle fighting they got now with the hockey players, and they put them in the ring. Is that what you're saying?
My last fight was when I played in the NHL in 1999, and I will never fight again.
That's a good answer. That's a good answer. Let's go talking about looking what happened behind us. I think it was your third year in the NHL. You guys made the playoffs in the old Norris division, which is funny because I was looking at the records. You were sub 500. You had like 15 ties, but you still make the playoffs and you win two rounds and you play the Edmonton Oilers in the conference finals and they ended up beating you. And they had an incredible year where they had 50 plus wins. Wayne Gretzky had almost 200 points. And I don't know if you can remember because it was so long ago and I have a terrible memory, but how important was that to that specific group? When you look at that team, you had you had Yzerman, Klima, Gallant, you had a Sean Burr and Adam Oates. Everybody was 22, 23 years old. As a young team who is striving to get to that spot where the Oilers are, how important was that to get, you know, your PP whacked by the Oilers in the conference final?
Well, it was 2 years in a row we lost to the Oilers in the conference final. And I think both years we might have won the first or second game and we gained home ice advantage, but that team wasn't going to be beaten, especially by us. But later on in life, when I went to New York and I got a chance to play with Glenn Anderson, Mark Messier, Kevin Lowe, all those guys that were on that team, they always said the worst series we had to play was against you guys because you didn't respect us, you slashed us, you beat us, you did everything you could do, and even our Zamboni driver would turn the ice machine off so the water would ice would melt, so we'd slow those guys down. We'd slow the guys down that way, but we did what we could, and we all learned a lot through that. But we knew we couldn't beat the Oilers. I mean Wayne Gretzky, Mark Messier, who was all there, Anderson, Nielsen, Coffee,
Coffee and Fear,
everybody.
Yeah. So you're hacking and slashing. Are you nervous of a Dave Semenko? I don't know if McSorley was there at that time, because you guys are instigators. Like, that's what the Red Wings were back in the day. You were rough and tumble teams, the Bruise brothers. Did you ever get pushback by other tough guys where Proby, you would go into a ring, you go, okay, here we go. We got to deal with a Craig Cox or a Grimson or whoever. Who were the guys who you were a little bit gun shy for?
For me, it was usually the taller guys, because I never got the 6 feet, but the Dave Brown, he was a massive man. There was a Wayne Van Dorp that was in Chicago, was a big man. So the taller guys that had the reach on me, I always had to think about Craig Cox. Craig was a hell of a fighter. So and he's a Northern Michigan boy.
He's Traverse City guys, guy. Yeah.
Sheboygan now, I think. So,
yeah.
Tesoro, how is Manchester?
Mom, could you put the match on to see what's happening?
Okay. And many yellows running left to right?
That's the referee. What's the score?
Oh, Louis and Sophia split up. Very sad.
Okay. What does it say at the top of the screen?
It says battery on 1%.
Can't watch sports from home? Proton VPN allows you to stream what you miss from over 120 countries. Download Proton VPN today. Check your streaming service terms and conditions. May restrict VPN use. Active streaming subscription required.
Enterprise value equals market capitalization plus total
asset
debt.
Pricing minus model equals risk-free rate plus
cost of
beta
capital
times
equals market. Percentage of equity times cost of equity plus percentage of debt times cost of debt.
Not intimidated? Good. The sharpest minds succeed with London Business School's finance courses, ranked in the top 5 by the Financial Times. Find out which of our world-class finance courses are right for you by searching LBS Finance today.
They were always a little tougher for me, because if I didn't have the reach, I knew I was going to have to take one of the nose to get to their nose. So that made it more interesting. If I had the same reach as a fighter, chances are I wasn't going to get hit, but those taller guys, I'd have to take one to give one, and hopefully mine was better than what they were throwing.
Gosh, you're terrifying to even talk to. I just don't understand your mentality. When you would start a fight, I would watch the way you start a fight. I wanted to ask you, it's very rare. It's unique, because most guys have their hands up and they're getting the distance and they're trying to, you know, be fearful of a punch or trying to get ready to throw a punch. Your hands are at your side and you're lunging into the fight. For the most part, why would you do that? Was that just instinct, or was it premeditated? Was there a method to your mayhem?
Well, my method would be to reach in as quick as I could and grab his shoulder. And once I got his shoulder, I could control his body. So when I threw a punch, not only was I throwing the punch, I was pulling him towards me. So I was getting a double power on it. there wasn't a lot of, there was a couple guys that I probably was a little more careful with, the Todd Ewan, Tony Twist, those guys. I didn't want to get it by those guys. They threw hard punches, but I never really had a punch that, or a guy that I fought that was going to hurt me. They might cut me. They might maybe break a bone, but I never, lucky enough, never got knocked out. So I didn't have to, that fear. I mean, if I'd have gotten knocked out early in my career, maybe I would have been so brave, but I was lucky enough to get through that without any major problems.
Man. And then you mentioned your punching power, and like I've been in hundreds of fights myself, and I've, you know, I'm when I played, I was like 270, you know, I should have been knocking guys out left and right, and I couldn't do it because I didn't have the punching power. And maybe I needed to pick up more rocks as a kid. I don't know, but how did you get that punching power? Like, where did that come from?
I don't know. I think it's just growing up on a farm and like picking stones, grabbing steel, working on the farm, grabbing bales. It's just, I think there's a lot of people from out west and that grew up on farms. They call it just kind of country strong because you don't lift weights, you don't run, you don't do anything. But when you spend 8, 10, 12 hours out in the field all day, that's just, I guess something happens. But as for the punching power, it's just, I think it was twofold. A lot of guys would grab a shoulder and lock their arm and just throw punches. Well, you can only reach so far with a punch. But if you pull the guy closer to you while you're punching, that power doubles, and that's where you're going to have success.
Well, let's transition. That's a perfect time to talking about the state of fighting today, because I just, when I, and specifically heavyweights, and you probably watched my era and shook your head and go, what are you guys doing? It's a joke. Why are you not connecting on 100% of your punches? When I watch fighting these days, I am almost a little embarrassed to say that that's what I did, because you throw 50 punches and maybe you get a couple glancing punches that land. Most of it is all show, not a lot of go. What do you think? Because you played through an era where like it was grab on and whoever's tougher wins the fight. You're punching each other in the face. You're connecting with meat. Now it's an anomaly when there's a punch that lands. Everyone's just shocked. Oh, he has a black eye. Oh my goodness. That's crazy. What do you think of the state of fighting today in the NHL? Yeah, be honest.
I don't think it's not fighting anymore. It's these guys all get trained. They all have their trainers. And those trainers, I don't believe, are teaching them how to fight. They're teaching them how to be safe out there. I mean, they're throwing punches, but they're not leaning into a punch. They're standing, got their head back, their shoulders back. They're just trying to make it look good. If they catch one, great. Back when you and I were fighting, we weren't trying to win the fight. We were trying to knock the guy out and demoralize the other team, the other fans. It was more of a, there was a reason for our fight now, or for our fights. Now I don't see it. I mean, they're not fighting because they're mad at somebody. They're fighting just because they're an enforcer and they've got to fight 10 times a year. We were fighting 3 times a game because that's what we wanted to do. And that's what we felt we had to do to stay in the game.
Well, I'm grateful you put me in the same category as you, because I'm definitely not. But I think it goes hand in hand with just caring about your teammates. And that's what you want to do because you want to win. That's what you did back in the day, which leads me to this question. If you're a GM now, you put the GM hat on, how would you build your team? Because you look at the Panthers, how they've been successful. Do you go all skill like the Leafs have been trying to do, where the Oilers, you know, I think they've got some, a little bit of toughness, not that much, but you see what's successful. You've won 3 rings. How do you build your team, Joe?
Well, it's got to be, you got to have skill. 100%. You got to have skill. You got to have puck moving defensemen, and you got to have a great goaltender. But you have to have grit. I mean, back in 97, when we won our cup, we had the grind line. We had McCarty. We got Shanahan. We had Marty Lapointe. We had Bobby Rouse. We had some tough defensemen. We had Fedosov. You have to be able to grind down the other team come playoffs. I look at, like, even Detroit this year. I've gone to a couple games, and they don't have a fourth line that's going to be physical. And it's not going to hurt them in the regular season because, you know what, it's not that important. But you get into a seven-game series and you look at Florida the last three years, yep. I guess, they beat the crap out of the other team's defensemen and forwards. And by the end of the playoffs, they're the last man standing because they've been the aggressor all playoffs and they're not backing down from anybody. And, I mean, you still do get hurt when you're the physical guy, but you don't get hurt as much. You've damaged the other guys. You've damaged their belief in their game. And you know what? At some point, they start taking an extra look and taking an extra step, and they're not getting the puck out. And I think that's why they were so successful over Edmonton and the other teams they played.
And it's funny to even you had the Bruce Brothers line. That was the big line. There was a Legion of Doom. I just had Randy McKay on the show last month. He had the crash line with him and Holik, and I think it was Peluso.
Yep.
That's why Stanley Cups are won. Like, no offense to Fedorov and Yzerman or anything like that. The Red Wings don't win the Cup without guys like you and Draper and Maltby and McCarty. Those are the guys who score the big goals and, do the big moments. Yes, it's great to have skill, but you need those guys to supplement the high-end guys because a lot of the times they just get kind of nullified. So it's cool to see. And just going back to Randy McKay, when you were with the Rangers, he talked about that the prediction of Mark Messier, because he was on the other end of it. And he's like, we were up 3-2. We thought we had that series won. What was it like in the Rangers locker room when you wake up the next morning? Because, yeah, there's no cell phones. You read in the front of the paper, it says, we're going to win game six. What was the locker room like when you see that in the morning?
Well, we all get there a little early, having our coffee, and Mess walks in, and we all kind of look at him. And he's like, I said, that's good. He said, that's not exactly how it was supposed to come out. A reporter asked me, how are you guys going to do tomorrow? He says, what am I going to say? Of course, I'm going to say we're going to win. Well, that reporter turns it into, I guarantee we're going to win, kind of like old Joe Namath back in the day. But for him to say that and still come in the room and have belief and say, yes, we can do this. We've got to do what we got to do. And then he goes out and gets a hat trick. And was it in the third period he got a hat trick?
Yep.
Uh-oh, I think my headset just went out. Can you still hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can, but I think I just lost one, so hopefully this one works as well.
Charge your headphones, Joe.
They're just old headphones.
But yeah, go ahead. So he scored a hat trick in game six, and then you got game seven. You wrap it up.
Yeah, that was that series was just incredible. I think two of the games were double overtime. Stephen Matteau scored in game seven to win that series. And then we go to Vancouver and we have all the momentum in the world. We lose game one, I believe, at home, but we had like 60 shots on goal. We win the next three. They're planning on a parade in New York, and we had two crappy games and we had to come back and win game seven, but it was still pretty special.
Yeah, and you were a big part of that team. I know you didn't put up points, but you played 70-plus games. You played every game in the playoffs. What's that like being in that atmosphere? Because that's your first Stanley Cup, Mark Messier doing the prediction, winning away from Edmonton. How cool was that to get your first cup? That's 10 years into your career, Joe.
Yeah, that was I was lucky enough to get traded to a team that was just amazing. I think we counted the one time there was 7 ex-Edmonton Oilers who was a Stanley Cup champion that came to our team that year. And then we picked up 3 or 4 Chicago Blackhawks that went to the finals against Minnesota, I think it was previously. So we had a very veteran team. And I learned a lot from all those Oiler guys, and I was able to learn that, gather that information, and take it with me to to Detroit a few years later.
Well, let's talk about that, because I heard the story that you told on another show about how you got to Detroit. You finished up in Vancouver. You did not get an offer after the season. You were kind of kicking around, not doing much. And how does Proby get you back in the NHL? It's a great story.
Well, I was actually playing in the beer leagues in Highland here. So I was just trying to get some ice time, have some fun. But it was November and the Chicago Blackhawks were in town. And I went to the game, watched the game, waited around for Proby after the game. And I, just joking with him, I said, Proby, next time you're in Detroit, you got to do something. Go a little crazy. Make them think they got to get tougher and help me get back in the league. So a few weeks later, maybe a month later, they come to town, and Proby just, I don't know if he did that because he remembered what I asked him to do, but he did. He beat up two or three guys. He was just a menace on the ice. And the next day, Scotty Bowman calls my agent and tells my agent, tell Joe to go down and get in shape. We want to bring him back to the NHL. And I got the call right before Christmas, came back to Detroit. Our first game was, I think it was like the 28th of December. We played Dallas at home. And the next night was in Chicago. And sure enough, 3-4 minutes into the game, I lined up right against Proby. And again, now we've been best friends for forever. We did have a couple fights when I was with New York, but those were, I want to say they were accidents more or less, because something was going on. We just happened to get stuck together, so we fought.
Yeah.
But this is the first time that I really dropped the gloves, and I'm like, Proby, you got me back in this game, so I've got to go after you. And he didn't really catch on that that's why I fought him. We talked 10 years later, and I told this exact same story. And he goes, you know, I never knew why you wanted to fight me that game. I got you back in the game. I'm like, well, you got me back in the game to protect the team from you. So we had a lot of good stories and good laughs about that.
Isn't that nuts that that one little conversation and him beating the doors off somebody gets you back? And you, so you're 31. So you're just skating at home in a beer league. Do you think you're done? Like, is it, you know, I had a good decade long career. That's it.
I didn't think I was done because I was working out. I was lifting weights. I was stronger than I ever was in my playing career. And I had hoped, wouldn't have been working out if I thought I was done, but I was just blessed to have something happen, and I was given a chance. And the greatest part about that chance is I came to Detroit with Scotty Bowman, and my first meeting with Scotty Bowman, he called me into his office, and he said, I don't want you fighting.
Je t'aime, darling. Please, stay with me.
I'm sorry. This content isn't available in your region.
Épouse-moi.
I want to. I do, but this content isn't available in your region.
Oh, sacré bleu.
That's not available either.
Can't watch TV from home? Proton VPN allows you to stream what you miss from over 120 countries. Download Proton VPN today. Check your streaming service terms and conditions. May restrict VPN use. Active streaming subscription required.
I'm Richard Simcock. I'm a cancer specialist, and I work with a team that always do their best for all of our patients. But we can't be there around the clock to support them. And that's why I recommend the Macmillan Online Community. It's a safe, anonymous online forum open 24 hours a day, and everyone there knows what it's like to have cancer. As a doctor, I do everything I can, but I know that when I can't be there, they can be.
Search Macmillan Online Community.
I looked at him, I said, Scotty, isn't that why you signed me? He says, he says, you will fight, but I don't want you just to go out and fight. He says, I want to be able to have you there at any point that I need you. If you're sitting in that penalty box, you're useless to me. If you're sitting there on the bench right in front of me, the other team's not going to do and take liberties. I want you to play the game, and if you have to fight, you fight, but I want you to be a hockey player now.
Which is, as a fighter, as a former fighter, I've had a couple coaches say that to me. It's the greatest compliment for a coach to say that to a fighter, because it validates you as a player. You're not just like this meat stick to go out and just beat each other up. Like, I don't know. That's got to feel good. And then especially on a team like that, where he goes, no, we want you to play. And you're like, holy crap. Like, I'm playing with LaPointe and Konstantinov and Chani and McCarty and Yzerman. Like, these are Hall of Famers, Joe. And he's telling you he wants you to play. That's got to, as just mentally, that's got to feel pretty good.
Well, I think the big mental aspect of that is you don't have to look at the roster of the other team every night and figure out who you're going to fight. You're actually preparing for an actual hockey game. You're going to be physical. You're going to just play hockey. And if a fight happens, it happens. Before that, we had to make the fights happen. We had to plan ahead. We had to live on the edge, if you want to call it that. We were always a little nervous. We never wanted to embarrass our team or our city or anybody. But when Scotty said that, it kind of releases you from the fact that you got to fight every time, and he's not going to bench you if you back down or if you don't fight somebody, it lets you just free yourself up to play hockey. And it was a really good 3-year run I had in Detroit, especially playing with Maltby and Draper. We had so much synergy. We had so much fun on the ice, and they made me feel young. They kept me on my toes because of their comments and their chirps and just protecting them on the ice.
Well, they were almost the first iteration of this kind of pest, this rat type player that we see nowadays with the Brad Marchands and these types of player. What was that like playing with these guys? Because I played with some guys who, you know, the other teams hate it, absolutely hate it. You know, a Steve Ott or a Patrick Coletta, these guys where they're just hated. You played with the original guys, the OGs. What were Maltby and Draper saying that people hated them so much?
Whatever they wanted. I mean, they would spray a goalie with the snow. They would, I mean, sorry if you hear my dogs, but I mean, they would just say whatever came to mind, and they had no repercussions because they knew I was going to be there for them. But we were playing a game, I think it was in Phoenix, might have been in playoffs against, can you hear my dogs in the background? I do apologize.
No, you're fine. You're good, Joe.
Okay. We were playing against Phoenix. Sure enough, there's a scrum right in front of their goalie. And Draper Maltby does something. And as I pull in front of the net, Draper looks at me and looks at Jimmy Cummins and says, "Hey," and they played together in the past. He goes, "Hey, Cummer, what are you going to do now?" And Jim Cummins looked at Draper, looked at me, and looked at Maltby, and he said, "Nothing, but when he retires, I'm killing both of you."
That's got to feel good. I know I'm pumping your tires here and giving you all these compliments, but did you know that you were one of the top guys in the league? Like, did you know when you rested your head down, yeah, I'm top three in the league? Like, that. Did you know that?
I was lucky enough to play with Proby. I mean, Proby was the toughest of all. And a lot of times he would maybe take the bigger, stronger guy, and I'd maybe not have the biggest guy. So I got to gain my confidence that way. But when we split up, I had to become my own guy as well. So it was a lot of fun. I had success with it. I mean, sure, you lose some and you get hit with some, but I never got hit bad enough that it scared me.
And I know this is probably cliche, you've talked about it a lot, but just talk about Proby. Because I played with Boogie, Derek Boogaard, and then he obviously passed away tragically. So we kind of have a similar situation, but Proby was just such a presence. When you're playing with him for a decade, did you get that sense that he was that big of a presence?
He was a presence not only in the fact that he was so tough, so big, and the longer the fight lasted, the better he became, but he had skill. And I've said this, and I've said this with no disrespect to anyone that's in the Hall of Fame, and I said this at an event the other day when Jeremy Roenick, who just got inducted into the Hall of Fame, I'm like, Proby was a pioneer for that position. He was possibly one of the toughest of all time, if not the toughest, but he also scored 29 goals one year, and like you, he made the All-Star team. So
different reasons.
But my point would be that he was a pioneer. He was at the best at what he did. There was a gentleman, no disrespect, Nedimansky, that got into the Hall of Fame a few years ago because he was a pioneer. He was one of the first Europeans that come over. He didn't have Hall of Fame numbers, but he was a pioneer. Wouldn't Bob Probert be that same guy? When I mentioned this at a speaking engagement, and Jeremy Roenick heard me because he was sitting next to me, he's like, "I'm all in. I'm going to push that. I agree with that." It's not, he doesn't have the gaudy numbers that those guys need to have, but he did something, and he was the best at what he did. Why not make a spot for him?
And he didn't, like you mentioned, he put up points. He wasn't just this one-dimensional guy where you send him out there. Yes, he's tough, but he's a really good hockey player too.
He was really good.
I've thought that too, where he should be in the Hall of Fame 100%.
I think I got to remember the year. I think it was probably 88 or 89. I think he led our team in playoff scoring that year. So, I mean, you think about that, and he's got to go out and fight Semenko and all those guys. I mean, the year he had 29 goals, he also had 398 penalty minutes. If he spent a little more time in the ice, could he have got 40 goals? What a difference that would make.
Yeah, I'm looking at his stat line now. It was 87-88. You guys played 16 playoff games. He had 21 points. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not a fighter's number. He's getting more points than Klima and Oates and all these skill guys who are 5'7". Yeah, that's incredible.
Was Yzerman on that team, or was that the year he was injured?
No, he was injured. He got 3 playoff games in. He must have got hurt during the playoffs.
And Proby still had all his points and not having the centerman that he played with that year. That's pretty amazing.
And then, Joe, you had 1 assist.
That was a good assist, though, probably.
I still remember that assist. It was a great pass. Speaking of that, because obviously your highlights fighting are everywhere. You know, Goodnight, Jim Kite, all these fights, you fought everybody and anybody who would ask, and you did well. Aside from the fights, what's your best memory in NHL? Like, I know mine is I got a certain goals that I like, a couple good passes. That's how pathetic I am. But when you look back, offensively, it's like, what do you go? Yeah, that was a hell of a play.
I would say the 97 Stanley Cup Finals, the goal against Philadelphia. Shel Samuelson threw one up the middle, and I was lucky enough to pick it off and go in and score on Hextall. And it was and actually, Draper Maltby scored the goal before me, so the grind line had the first 2 goals of the game. We won the game, and Hockey Night in Canada did a little video of the grind line before the next game to the sound of Rocky, because it was in Philadelphia, and they had us skipping rope and doing all this stuff. So it was that was that one moment where we got our few minutes of fame, where we normally wouldn't as a fourth line, but that's what really took us over the limit and had to get. It was a moment I'll never forget because my parents got to watch it all on Hockey Night in Canada and everything. So that was pretty cool.
I was just gonna say how it's different now. Having Don Cherry back in the day with Coach's Corner, being able to go and talk to Don and getting that spotlight. How neat was that? Because I grew up watching Don and Coach's Corner, and you talked to him many, many times. How cool was that?
It was exciting. I mean, and again, we go back to that no phones, no social media, no cameras, but to play in Maple Leaf Gardens and to know that everybody that you ever grew up with or anyone you played hockey with or anybody that lived in the town that you are from is watching you on Hockey Night in Canada, maybe get a goal, maybe get something. There was a night that I got 2 goals and assists and I got first star. My dad, till the day he passed away, would watch that video on VHS and just, it was just a proud moment. But that's what it was back in the day, because you got one chance to watch it unless somebody pressed the VCR button and recorded it. Now you can watch any play, anytime, anywhere. But back in those days, playing the Toronto Maple Leafs at Maple Leaf Gardens and knowing your whole town was shut down to watch it was pretty exciting time for me.
All right, couple more. And then I threw this out on Twitter. I said, what should I ask Joey Kosher? And it was overwhelming. We want a Probert story. And I know we got the one about him getting you back into the NHL. Is there any good stories when you guys played together, either on the ice, off the ice? I know I'm putting you on the spot and you hate doing this. And if you just want to say no, I get it. But is there any, you know, stories about you and Proby?
Well, it's not a bad story. It would be frowned upon in today's game. But, yeah, him and I went to a Halloween party one night at one of our teammates' houses. It was about a 40-minute drive away. And we got dressed up as Laurel and Hardy. And we went to the party. We had a few drinks. And on the way home, we were kind of in a hurry to get to a local establishment that we wanted to get to. And I'm driving. I look back in the rearview mirror, and all it is red lights. Well, back in the day, we were pretty well known in the Detroit area. So when we got pulled over, they just looked at us and shook their heads and like, where are you two dummies going? And like, we're just going home. We're going to go visit some people. And they're like, just slow down. I think we were doing about 110 on the highway at the time. But it was a different lifestyle. Proby and I, just, we had so much fun together. We we did everything together for the first couple of years, but I know he had a little bit of a different, went a different direction with some of the stuff he was doing. But in the end, he was one of the most gentle, nicest guys you'd ever meet. He had some hard times, but he was through all those times before he had his heart problem. And, we all miss him. And he was just a genuinely wonderful, wonderful teddy bear off the ice. On the ice, he was pretty whacked out. He was pretty crazy.
Who wore the Hitler stash? Because Laurel and Hardy, if you don't know, they got the black bowler hat, and the Hitler stash was on one of them. Who got
I don't
that
think we bar? Had. We had the face masks on. So oh, we didn't, okay. we had a whole funny mask on when we were driving our car. So I don't remember who was who.
Oh, gosh, Joe. Well, I will let you go. This has been fantastic. I can talk to you for another hour. It's great. But thank you for joining us. I appreciate it. Hopefully we can meet up in the future at an event and have a couple beers. I would love that. But thank you very much for coming on, my friend.
Thank you. We got to get you out and play with our Red Wing alumni next time we're up north.
I played on 7 teams. Unfortunately, the Wings were not one of them. I actually called every year. I would call the GM and the coach and, hey, do you want my services? And they'd go, no, we'd no toughness at all now. Do you think they need toughness on that Wings team?
Oh, my God.
It's a joke.
They need something.
Hey, they just beat Toronto twice. Here comes the parade.
Doesn't mean they're – Toronto's not tough either, though.
All right, Joey Kosher, everybody. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time. Cheers.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
Zoro, how's Manchester?
Mom, could you put the match on to see what's happening?
Okay. Emanuelos running left to right?
That's the referee. What's the score?
Oh, Luis and Sofia split up. Very sad.
Okay, what does it say at the top of the screen?
It says battery on 1%.
Can't watch sports from home? Proton VPN allows you to stream what you miss from over 120 countries. Download Proton VPN today. Check your streaming service terms and conditions may restrict VPN use. Active streaming subscription required.
Hello. I'm currently out of office. An article I read recently said we're more relaxed and more productive after a good break. So I've gone to Barbados for a month for science. Yours, Toby.
Take your holiday as seriously as British Airways holidays take your holiday. Atoll protected.
Blood test, scan, treatment. Ash knows the drill by now. But there's something else that helps her to live with cancer. The Macmillan online community. Log in, post, reply, chat, support, laugh. In a safe, anonymous online forum that's open 24 hours a day. If you need someone who knows what it's like to have cancer, search Macmillan Online Community.